have to say here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
My name is Melvin Trefon. I'm from Not Elton. I too am dissatisfied with the way the land claims is being implemented. I think some of the intentions there were and are being impeded by the fact that we are a for-profit corporation and we have some social obligations to our people, and by the fact that those two are not necessarily the same, the for-profit corporations have a duty of making money. I think there was an intent somewhere there for the corporations also to look after the well-being of the shareholders, but along the way, there was a separation, it seems, and there is not a real fine distinction or a line between how those two were supposed to be blended. I think there's some legislation needed to change some of the things that were charged to the native corporations. For instance, I'm a staff person working with Nunawut Native Corporation in the land department. I find that I'm doing, like with this 14C3 section in the Land Claims Act, that the corporation is charged to do what is really a public function, and it should not come from a private profit corporation. A private private corporation should not have to pay for something that could be paid for through, say, the state or federal government. I'm talking especially about the 14C3 planning. The intent of 14C and the responsibility of who is supposed to carry it out and how the planning and all that's being meshed together is, I think, a problem, because I think that we just need some legislation on that part. There are other things right now, but I'm at a loss for words. But anyway, I'm dissatisfied with the fact that we have to make special provisions for something that was intended for all natives. And usually it's not because of the natives' fault, it's because of this whole legislation, and we do need amendments. We need time, more time. Back when the land claims was passed, we were all basically subsistent users and not business people. And it takes time and a lot of learning on each and every one of our parts, and through education, and I don't see that the corporations the corporations are not really designed to encourage the younger people to learn all these, and just by our nature as natives, we're not real competitive people. We're not business orientated. We're not. We just don't have that kind of a drive. Where anytime you have people in villages that you got to live with all your life, and then you have to compete with them on another basis for, say, like sitting on the board or directing action, and that, I don't think we're all geared up that much as natives for that type of a system. But I do think we need more time as far as 1991 is concerned, because we're just learning the real mechanisms or the real intent, or the whole claims is not, it's not even clear to even, I don't think, the lawyers who made it. So I'd ask that you make a recommendation that we have more time. And that's all. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
I'm Larry Hill, and I teach at New Haven School. I'm a member of the Kakanuk Village Corporation. I intended to be registered at Nundalton, but the person who did the paperwork didn't understand, I guess, and ended up in Kakanuk. Anyway, I'm not at all satisfied with the way the Settlement Act has turned out. I know the intent on the part of our Native people was to, it was completely different from the way it turned out, which to me is an example of the way all of the treaties or settlement claims of the indigenous peoples in the United States have been completely twisted around and or subverted, whatever terms you want to use. Also then, this means that this act was designed to fail, and it's doing that, in my opinion. We have people, and I've been in many of the villages in the state. And the students that I teach now that are in like the fifth or sixth grade, by the time you people are, well, in 1991, you people will be 18 years old or older. We have people in high school now who will be legally in control of your stock. What are you going to do with it? How much do you know about this Settlement Act now? I'm speaking to you, especially to the younger people. How much do you know about it now? What is it going to be worth to you when you turn 18? And again, what are you going to do with it? The younger people, again, you need to, this is my advice, and which is easy for me to give, but people need to find out more about your own corporations. Do this, be aggressive about it. This 1991 issue is going to affect you for the rest of your life. That's only 6 years away. 6 short years. You have another 80 or so left to live. So in 6 years, something's going to happen that's going to affect you for another 80 or 90 years. Now is not too soon to be doing something about it. And personally, I haven't seen much, you know, direct benefit myself as to what the major corporations and village corporations have done for the individual people. They've become separated from the people who made it all possible. Everyone wanted Claim Settlement Act. Now the corporations are becoming separated from the people who they have an obligation to. Well, it's not entirely their fault. Some of us are so used to letting others do for us that we just keep on. And if we want this thing to work, we can't do that anymore. I'm not much of an example. I haven't done much other than take the dividend checks and spend it. I have not been involved in since 1971. But my main point of being here is just right now to appeal to you younger people. Start doing something now. Don't wait 6 years. Something's going to happen that'll affect you for the rest of your lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Thank you.
Mr. Berger, my name is Rick Delkitty. I work for my people and taken part in some of the changes we're living in.
Where are you from?
Non-Dalton. We are people who live in this day and age where changes are taking place, and we have to consult with people on the outside, whether it be state or federal level, and even within the state itself with other corporations, and hopefully the communication part of all the traditional councils in Alaska and IRA councils in Alaska have an opportunity to partake and sit down at a round table or wherever. There's issues that's been mentioned in the handout on subsistence and the people who are members of all these corporations in Alaska. It's really important for the people who live in the villages to attend meetings, although a lot of us don't like to sit down and listen to problems. But although they are still there, we have a vital interest which we've been integrated from the outside by different cultures other than the Aleut, Eskimo, and Indians, and other ethnic groups. The integration part, I feel, there is some of us who are partaking and making changes. I'm not happy with some of the laws that took place back then. I do have a problem with the 1971, and after that, the kids that's been born after that. there should be legislation to make that adjustment. Subsistence is a vital issue to all the villages, especially rural Alaska. We would like to, me personally, would like to have that right to be able to extract the resources that's around our community. We do have a culture, a heritage, and we are the people of the land. We are, this is where we started from, not necessarily in this area, but we did originate from this part of Alaska, which is on the west side of the Alaska Range. And subsistence is something that we partake when someone passes on in our community. It's something that we've been doing for a long, long time. And it's really important when our community have meetings and sit down and talk about problems. It's really important for all the people in that community to try to at least come in for a short while and listen and make their comments. It's really important because the government, federal government, say 1991, there's going to be a change there. And once that change takes place, integration is going to be more so than it is now. We're going to be experiencing a greater magnitude of influx of outsiders, if you will, and people from other bigger corporations. I just like to express that when them stocks are on open market, you think twice and consult with your own people, your elders, and hopefully there's someone, whether it be the corporation, the traditional council, or the city council, and maybe take special attention into and as to how that adjustment could be detoured. I also can't express myself anymore on how important it is. Sure, we all don't like to sit down and talk about problems and address certain issues, but it is really important. We do have interest in the land. We've been using it for the past, I don't know, a long time. And it would make not only the people in the area feel bad, but I would feel comfortable to say that there are a lot of outsiders that would not feel so good about it. That's about all I have to say. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you.
My name is Bill Trifon Sr. and I'm from Nundalton Tribal Council. I don't have too much to add to what most of the people from Nundalton testified. The only thing I say is I'm not satisfied with the land claim. They didn't give us enough time to even to understand, you know, what the land claim is all about. They give us 20 years and we already went through 13 or 15 years of already. We're just beginning to understand what's happening to us. And we still don't know what's happening to us. A lot of people from the outside tell us, you know, just listen to what they tell us is right. And what we've got to say is, we had to, well, we didn't know. Whatever they said, we believed them. And we did it, and then that we made mistakes that we're finally finding out where we made those mistakes. Like I said, I have too much to add to what they already testified against. The only thing I can say is that after 1991, all the stocks were open, they could be sold. And if you sell your stock, and you're only selling your stock, you're selling your rights. And once you sell 51% of your rights to the outside society, you lose control. Once you lose control, you lose your tradition, you lose everything. And that's one thing we're worried about. And you know, we grew up in a tradition way of life. You know, land claim came, they brought the Western society, which we don't know nothing about. And like I say, and then another thing in the land claim, they got the seven eye. And that's been put in there just so the region could fight the village. And I don't think that's right either. So, like everybody expressing here that after 1991, if you sell your stock, you're not only selling your stock, you're selling your rights to your heritage and to your way of life. And that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Trifon. Well, we've heard from 31 people so far yesterday and today, and it's a kind of like a picture that I'm trying to put together as I go from village to village, and each person in each village helps to put a little bigger piece into the whole picture, so that by the time I'm through, I think I'll be able to make some worthwhile recommendations. Were there some people here who came from Pedro Bay? Do you want to come up here, or we can bring the microphone over to where you are if you'd like to just tell us a little bit about what's on your minds? Oh. That's a microphone she's carrying with her. Let me just, because we've got some folks here who weren't here yesterday, maybe I could just talk a little bit about some of these questions. The biggest thing that people all over the state are talking about, I've been to 54 villages already. This will make 55, this visit to New Halen. And at each village, people come from other villages, just like this isn't just New Halen, this is Nundalton and Iliamna and Pedro Bay and so on. So we get a pretty good idea how people all over the state are thinking. And everywhere, just about everywhere, they're unhappy with ANCSA, and they are concerned that that they could lose their land after 1991. They feel that it wasn't fair that this corporate setup was established back in 1971 when Native people weren't qualified to run businesses, and they feel that they were forced into some pretty bad deals as a result, lost a lot of money, but they've still got the land, and they want to make sure they don't lose that. People are also concerned about subsistence. They think that subsistence is important. It's an insurance policy. It's money in the bank. When times get tough, people can still hunt and fish and get by that way. And they're worried about limits being placed on subsistence, both on the in the fishery and in the bush. And they also feel that the children born since 1971 should be allowed to participate, that they should have the same rights as everybody else in the native villages. And so we've been hearing a lot about all of these questions. And I've been saying to people, look, you've got shares in these corporations. When 1991 arrives, do you want to be able to sell your shares and get some money for them, and then you can spend the money, buy a pickup truck, or maybe buy a house? Maybe you won't get much money for them. Maybe all you'll be able to buy with what you get is a three-wheeler. I don't know. Nobody knows. But if, as Mr. Wilson was saying, and as some other witnesses have said, if you've got 200 shareholders in your corporation and 101 sell their shares to some guy from Anchorage who comes in here and wants to buy them, then that guy from Anchorage is going to own your corporation, he's going to own all your land, and he can keep all of you off that land, he can put up no trespassing signs, and keep even the shareholders off. If he's got a majority of shares, he can keep even the shareholders off. So, as Larry Hill was saying, this is pretty important stuff you're going to have to think about, and I'm glad you're all thinking about it. We heard from a lot of the students, younger people, yesterday, and it's clear they've started to think about it, and they asked some pretty good questions too. I've been asked by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People to come around here and find out how you feel about all this. What do you think about your land claim settlement? How did it work out? You know, I come from Canada, and people in Canada in the lower 48 back in 1971 read that you were getting $962.5 million and 44 million acres of land, and we thought, wow, those people are going to be well off. A lot of people thought Alaska Natives had become millionaires. Well, because of the way Congress set it up, the land and the money went to the corporations. And some of the corporations have done some good things. They've gone into business. They've had successes. But most of them at the village level have had a real tough time, and they are not very happy about the way it's worked out. The regional corporations, some of them have made money, some pay dividends. Bristol Bay pays $33 every 3 months, I believe. Some of the regional corporations, however, that are not paying dividends. They haven't worked out very well. So we've been hearing about all of these questions, and I wish that this thing had worked out a lot better, but it hasn't. Something's got to be done about it. I think I know what the problems are. My job is to write a report setting out what changes should be made based on what you've told me. And I intend to do that. And as I said, I'll send that report to you in September. Maybe I could tell you that in Canada, Native people are settling their claims now in the Canadian North. I spent 3 years in the Canadian Arctic back in the 70s, and I went to all the villages, Eskimo and Indian villages, and wrote a report about land claims for the government of Canada. And now they are settling claims on the basis of the recommendations I made. And some of the Eskimos in the Canadian North just reached their land claim settlement about August last year. So these are 3,000 Eskimos who live in a what's called the Mackenzie Delta, and they looked at Alaska and they said, well, we don't want that kind of settlement because we want the land to be held so that it can never be transferred from Eskimos to non-Eskimos. So that's in their land claim settlement. They got more land than you did on a per capita basis, and they got more money, but they said, okay, now that we've got the money, we'll give it to a corporation that can go into business for us. But they said, we want the land to be held separately so that the business is conducted by a corporation and it works here, and if they lose, then they can't grab our land to pay the corporation's debts. They also said, we want to make sure they can never tax our land. So they got a provision in their land claim settlement that the government can never tax their land if it's used for subsistence. Now, if they find oil and they go into partnership with the oil companies, sure, they have to pay taxes. But as long as it's subsistence land, they don't ever have to pay taxes. They also said, we've been to Alaska and we saw what happened to subsistence there. ANCSA abolished Aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing, so now those Alaskans, natives, have to depend on federal and state laws. So they said, we want to strengthen our subsistence in our land claim settlement. So that's what they got. And they not only have their land in their region, but they have the exclusive right to take polar bears and grizzly bears and muskox throughout the whole region. Not just their land, but throughout the whole region. And they also have an exclusive subsistence preference throughout the whole region. So that there are some white people who have subsistence licenses now in that region, but when they die, their licenses are canceled, and the government agreed there would be no further subsistence permits given to anybody, that the Eskimos would be the only people with the right to engage in subsistence. Now, I mentioned that to show that people around the world are looking at these questions and they're starting to settle their claims, and they've tried to learn from what happened here in Alaska. Maybe you can learn from what's happening in these other places. That land claim settlement I mentioned just now in the Mackenzie Delta, where those 3,000 Eskimos got that settlement, I think that's the best settlement that I've heard of. And they spent about 8 years negotiating that settlement to get it.
Where do you get the information from?
Well, we can send it to you if you like. And I'll be mentioning some of these things in my report, because I think that if you're going to go to Congress and say that you want some changes made, Congress should be aware that what happened in 1971 may not be the best thing for all time. In fact, Congress settled the claims of some tribes of Indians in the state of Maine in 1980. That's just 4 years ago, and that's in the lower 48. And they said, well, we don't want these shareholders' corporations that they have in Alaska, because we don't want to face 1991. So Congress said, okay. Said, you don't have to do what we made Alaska do. So you can mention that to Congress. I'll refer to this in my report. Don't worry about that. But I'm just trying to tell you that a lot of things are happening out there, and a lot of folks are thinking about land claims and what has to be done. Well, I just thought I'd mention some of these things because we had a good discussion yesterday, and I didn't have and some of you weren't here. If you fellows from Pedro Bay want to say anything or ask any questions, you're certainly welcome.
I'd like to ask a question.
Yeah, could I have your name?
David Richteroff. Okay, I have land over here in Pedro Bay in 1991. Are we going to be taxed on that?
Well, if you've got a native allotment, and I think that's what you're talking about, native allotments are okay. They can't tax native allotments, and they can't be taken over. The only thing that you have to worry about is the Native Corporation land. If you've got a Native Corporation in Pedro Bay, then that land is the land we're talking about. But the people with allotments are okay. They'll be able to keep their land.
That's all I got to ask.
I'm Vern Jensen from Pedro Bay, and the most I know about 1991 is what I've heard here today on selling your stock and losing your rights. A lot of people, like my parents even, my mother doesn't read or write, but to read the Alaska Settlement Claims Act, is you have to be a lawyer practically to understand it. So if there was any way to simplify all the most devastating issues that are going to happen to us, maybe just put it in a pamphlet or something to where people can read it and understand it a little better. It helped me a lot anyway. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, well, it's a very complicated act. Belly. Well, just before we I'll just do a little more talking, and then before we close the meeting, we'll just make sure nobody else wants to say anything. But when we've gone around the state, people in the villages have been thinking, what are we going to do about this? And there's really two ways of attacking it that they keep talking about. And one way is to say, well, the land is held by the corporations, so we want to make sure nobody can take over the corporations. So they've said, well, let's make sure there are permanent restrictions on the shares, so that even after 1991, people can't sell their shares. Then Native people will always control these corporations, and outsiders won't be able to take them over. That's one thing. The other line of attack is that people in the villages have brought up is they've said, well, let's transfer the land from the corporations to the traditional councils or the IRA governments, so that the land will safely be held by the people in those traditional councils, the IRA governments, so that even if somebody takes over our corporation, our land is still held by the village or by the tribe or by the IRA or by the village council, and nobody can get at it. Well, those are two interesting approaches, and I'm going to be thinking about both of them and thinking about maybe how to get the right solution out of all this, because the paramount thing that people have indicated is they want to keep their land. No question about that. Anybody else like to speak?
My name is Waspiller from the North Native Corporation, and I testified yesterday, but I was just going to ask, or if you probably know, when Alaska was sold by the Russians to the United States, I think there was provisions in there that they were supposed to take care of the people, but I think that was excluded during land claims, and there was another treaty that was broken. I don't know what the language is or anything on that language for the sale.
Well, when the Russians sold Alaska to the United States, Back in 1867, for $7 million, there was a provision that the United States would respect the rights of the Alaska Natives. And in fact, Congress passed a law in 1884 saying that anybody that came to Alaska had to respect the rights of the Alaska Natives. Congress really said the same thing again at the time of the Statehood Act in 1958. It said the state could select lands, but this would be not so as to impair the rights of Alaska Natives in the land. Well, that's why ANCSA really was passed, because Congress realized that all the land that had been taken by individuals and by the state had encroached upon Alaska Natives' land. So that's why they passed that settlement. They said, all right, we'll give Alaska Natives 10% of the land of Alaska. That's 44 million acres. We know they used to own the other 90%, and we've taken it from them. And so we're going to pay them $962.5 million for that other 90% of Alaska. And so Congress said, all right, we've done it, and we now extinguish your Aboriginal title and your Aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing. And if you look at ANCSA, that's what they did. That's why you got the money. You now have fee simple title to the land. And the job, it seems to me, is to make sure you hang on to what you got.
Well, I guess, in other words, there was another treaty that was broken, or the negotiators didn't probably realize what they were giving up.
Well, the people that represented you in Washington in 1971 didn't really have much choice. The Congress was saying to them, well, here it is, take it or leave it. And I guess they thought, well, if we don't take this, we might wind up with something not as good. They were in a tough spot, and I don't think you can blame them for anything that happened. But this is now 14 years later, and people have had a lot of experience, they've thought about it, and now they want to see what changes they can make to improve it. You know, Congress has changed ANCSA three times already because they saw that mistakes were made in ANCSA. So if you're going down there now and you're going to say to them, it's time for a major overhaul, well, if you've got a good case, I suppose they'll listen to you. Yes, sir. Well, the question is, what is the chance of going back to Congress to ask for an extension? I mean, nobody really can foretell what's going to happen, but you've got 6 years, 1985, 1991, 6 years. And I will be sending you my report in September, and it'll go to everybody who testified here. It'll go to the mayor. It'll go to the village council, it'll go to the school and the local corporation and the regional corporation. And in it, I'm going to say, look, I spent a year traveling in Alaska. This is what the people told me. This is what they want. These are my recommendations. And if you go to Congress with my report, if you decide that I have faithfully reflected what you've told me, you can go to Congress and say, look, here's a man who spent 12 months going from village to village. He listened to everybody that wanted to speak, and it's all there, and you read this report, and then maybe we can get some changes here. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, and you don't, and nobody else does, but I hope my report will help you to plan what you're going to do about this. Pardon? Yeah. I'm not here representing the federal government. I don't represent the state of Alaska. This is the first commission of its kind, because the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People, which are two international native peoples organizations, and they're affiliated with the United Nations, they said let's have a commission that reviews the Alaska Land Claims Settlement Act so we can get recommendations to help Alaska Natives and to help Native people in other countries to make sure they don't make the same mistakes. And to make sure where the Alaskan settlement has been a good one, that maybe they can copy some of the good things about it. We didn't hear much about the good things today, but there are some good things about it. And so they said to me, they said, "Will you come to Alaska and do this job?" And I said, "Okay." So that's what we're trying to do. Mr. Hill?
Yes, I'm curious what happened to the Eskimo people in Russia that were trying to press their claims in the same way that we've done ours?
Well, you referred to the Eskimo people in the Soviet Union, in Russia. There are Eskimo people in Greenland, Canada, and Alaska, and there are Eskimo people in Russia. And I've, of course, know Canada well, and I've been to all the Eskimo villages there. I'm going to Greenland in a couple of months. I've been all through Alaska, and I've asked the Soviet government to let me visit the Eskimo villages in Siberia. Now, they haven't let anybody go to visit those villages since the Cold War began, about 1949. But I've asked them to let me come there, and we don't know whether they will let me come or not. But if they do, I'll tell you all about it.
Once the commission is, the reports are out, and you make your recommendation, now whose job would it be to say, go ahead, go to Congress with whatever solution we find?
Well, you've got a lot of organizations here. You've got your village traditional councils. You've got your local village corporations. You've got your city councils. You've got your regional corporations. You've got your regional nonprofits. You've got BBNC and BBNA, and you've got the AFN, and you've got the United Tribes of Alaska, you've got the